You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to this week's Myopia Defended Childhood. I apologize for the quality of my voice, because I have a cold right now, and we did not, luckily, when I recorded this episode with some folks. With that in mind, let's talk a little bit about this week. First, thanks for everyone who voted for Cineprov in the Creative Loafing poll. For those of you who don't know or missed last week, we were voted the best comedy show in Atlanta as the People's Choice, so good on that. Second, next show is November 1st, and I will be in it doing Halloween 6, which is awful. Just atrocious. Curse of Michael Myers, although Paul Steven Rudd is in it, so there you go. The Steven is for awesome. What else? Oh, well, we are nearly done with our Monster Month, and if you have monster movies you wish we had done, go to Facebook and tell us about them. We're doing a listener request month come spring, and otherwise, you guys are great. I really appreciate how much we've grown in the last year, and please keep sharing us. It means a lot to me that my fans are so respectful and reactive. Thanks.
Greetings, Starfighters. It's Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast. Join me and the Rusty crew as we break down the latest geeky movie trailers, talk about TV, comics, toys, games, casting news, and all things nerdy. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the ESO Network, and at therustedrobot.podbean.com. The Rusted Robot Podcast, your source for geek since 2014.
The Rusted Robot Podcast. Think about it.
Welcome to Movie Defense Childhood. This week we conclude. Is this the end of the Monster Month? Okay.
No, there's one more after this.
Oh, that's right. We have one more movie.
Well, I mustn't forget Deep Rising. That's my movie.
Oh, yeah. Let's leak it. We're doing Deep Rising next week. We're doing Lake Placid, what happens when you watch Jurassic Park and Jaws at the same time. And
oh, that's giving it too much credit. It's nowhere near as good.
It's what it thinks it's doing, though. This is El Spielbergo, his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Jesus. Did someone say Mexiquin?
Mexiquin. I was plagiarizing a joke. It turned out to make a Mexiquin joke. Anyway, speaking of Mexiquin.
I went scuba diving one day and never came back.
There you go. And your name is?
Yes.
Matthew W. Quinn. Speculative friction writer and
friction writer. Oh my!
Ooh, I've read Battle for the Wasteland. Daniel,
hello. This is Daniel, and I have a thing about ticks. Okay, I just have a thing about ticks.
Bridget Fonda is the worst.
Remember when she was in movies and then she suddenly wasn't?
Was this the reason? I mean, it could have been.
She did a couple things after this. I want to say she was in Monkey Bone. If anybody remembers that,
is that a kids' movie?
No. It can't possibly have been a kid's movie.
I think it's rated R, isn't it?
Or at least PG-13.
We're going to look this up, aren't we?
Don't we kind of have to? But we're talking what? I mean, we're talking Lake Placid. Lake Placid is not a movie, by the way.
This was directed by the guy who directed such classics as Halloween H2O and Friday the 13th 2 and 3. So he's responsible for the hockey mask.
Okay.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing. This movie, I want to know what happened. Like, there's an interesting, like, what is it called?
Idea? Groaning in agony?
Heart of Darkness style documentary on the set of this movie, because everyone seems like they're on lewds. It seems like the movie had a place it was trying to go that it never gets.
Now all I'm doing is picturing Oliver Platt just going, I swallowed a bug.
The most unsympathetic characters I have seen in quite a long time, at least with eight-legged freaks. They were
the characters were better and somewhat more sympathetic. These people are all so obnoxious.
Well, the thing about Eight-Legged Freaks, it was genuinely funny at times.
Yeah.
For all the crappy things it did, there were moments when it was genuinely funny, mostly because of David Arquette. This tried so hard to be funny, but it wasn't.
There are a couple funny bits. Like, Betty White was hilarious.
Oh, Officer F*** me?
Okay, here's the thing.
There's several of them.
I don't think she was that funny. I don't. I like, here's the thing about her to me. She's good when she plays vapid and unaware, which is how she's done her entire career. And I don't know why this time she decided to play snarky, but I was happy she was in it because she was the best part.
Oh, by far.
But that doesn't mean it's any good.
She's 96, by the way.
Yeah, she was 76 when she made this. A ripe young 76.
Oh.
78. 78. 78.
Yeah. Well, they say 80 is the new 40.
Nobody. Who says that?
Nobody says that.
Nobody, but I just made
Kirk
it up.
Douglas, maybe.
80 is the new 40. That's why I'm still sexy as f***, Pilgrim. I love how the... Okay, so we should start talking about how this movie starts. First, a man gets bitten in half, whose name I don't know.
Does it matter?
No. He's hunting for beaver and then gets bitten in half. And literally, the sheriff, played by a put-upon Brendan Gleeson, pulls out half of a human being who looks in his eyes and does his last gasp.
Can you go back to the part where you said hunting for beaver? Because the note I literally took here is... Opening scene is two men on a boat. This is not a porno.
But that's what he's looking for. He literally goes, yeah. I'm going to count all the beaver. You going to say more than one word at a time? Nope. Like, nope. And then again, he gets bitten in half. And then we cut to like...
There's only like two or three people that die in this movie, and he's one of them.
Yeah, it's remarkably bloodless.
Yeah.
They didn't even kill off the crocodile groupie.
Nope.
Oliver Platt. No, they did not. Hector.
Oh. Remember when Oliver Platt was in movies, but suddenly he wasn't?
Who replaced him? He keeps reminding me of someone, and I can't put my finger on it.
Zach Galifianakis, kind of?
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis.
Kind of looks like him a little bit, only not as ginger.
He was Porthos in The Three Musketeers. Remember that train wreck?
Oh, yeah. The Disney one with Chris O'Donnell in it?
I believe it's Chris O'Donnell, and it's, is it Charlie Sheen?
Is that the one that came out in the early 90s and featured a guy surviving because his cross stopped a bullet?
Yep.
Now, to be fair, I haven't...
Time to Defend Your Childhood. I like that one.
I haven't checked the Tribune, so Oliver Platt may still be working. I remember when he was in every other movie that was coming out.
He was in 2012.
Oh, there you go.
Which came out in 2012.
Dun, 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 dun.
2009, in fact, because I couldn't even get that right. He does TVs now, but he did narration for American Experience, so that doesn't count as work. You know what he was in that was good? Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Oh, about the Wonder Woman's creator who invented the lie detector. Is that it?
Yeah, but it's just a small piece. To your point, he used to be big and now he's on TV shows that no one cares about, mostly with Chicago in the name, including Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Justice, and Chicago Med, where he plays the same character in all of them.
Aren't they in like a shared universe or something?
I would hope so. Otherwise, it's really shitty.
Well, I'm sure it still kind of is, but let's...
I mean, it's Chicago, guys. Come on.
So, yeah.
Okay, before we get to anywhere, the name is stupid as hell, guys.
It's supposed to be a joke name because apparently the lake isn't even Lake Placid.
No, this is in Maine. Lake Placid is in New York, where there was an Olympics. Right.
And let's have some Russian hockey players fight the crocodile. That'd be amusing.
Oh, my God.
I would pay to see that movie.
How is there not a parody commercial where it's the Miracle on Ice and then all of a sudden a gator comes up and eats a bunch of people?
How is Dolph Lundgren not in this movie?
Oh, my God. You could have just asked him. He wasn't doing anything.
Geez, Daniel, write your How You Would Have Done It blog post. You can borrow the trademark from me about how you'd have done Lake Placid.
Please, from O.J. Simpson, if I recall correctly. How I would have done it if I did it. I mean, this movie is practically a crime.
No, I did not rip off O.J. Simpson. I never even read the book.
If the lake doesn't fit, you must acquit.
That's a good one.
Oliver Platt was in a movie Matthew Quinn produced called Merry Freaking Christmas, where he plays a character called Hobo Santa. What was that movie you were a PA on?
Santa's Boot Camp.
Santa's Boot Camp. I'm telling you, like, it just sounds like something.
Merry Friggin' Christmas sounds like a Hallmark movie if they're trying to be edgy.
That was a South Park song, if I can recall correctly.
I believe you're right. He also was in the TV series of Fargo and the movie Chef.
And and in The Tale of Princess Kaguya, or the... what's the Japanese film studio that Disney bought out?
Not Toho.
No, the animated one.
Studio Ghibli?
It's a new Studio Ghibli from 2013. Oh. Yeah. Anyway,
this week on We Love Oliver Platt, and we like naming things he was in.
Flat on Platt.
There you go.
All over Platt.
Ooh. Flattened by a bus.
Oh, gross.
Oh, no.
That's gone.
I killed it.
We then cut to New York City, right? Oh, well, Daniel, just give us the plot. Just do it for like...
I mean, it's Jaws, pretty much. There's apparently something in them there, lakes in Maine, and it turns out to be like some 30-foot Indian crocodile that somehow...
Oh, no, someone out in the lake is eating children, Martha.
Like a doll's ass. But anyway, so...
You have the Australian accent as a saltwater crocodile.
No, I'm trying to do the Mainer accent, like Pepperidge Farm, remember?
Yes.
Pepperidge Farms, like a doll's eyes.
Oh, no, but anyway, so they hire a couple of people to come and check it out. The wildlife gang guy, who's Bill Pullman, the paleontologist, who's Bridget Fonda, and then Oliver Platt, who's Oliver Platt.
I think he just shows up out of nowhere.
Well, he apparently dives with the crocodile, so they try and fight this crocodile, which is apparently being kept alive and fed by Betty White's... in her reclusive estate.
He just followed my husband home one day.
What we're led to believe by the end, I think, is that she imports these things. Like, she gets them because she has babies later.
Well, the babies, I thought that was the whole reason they had to introduce, spoilers, two crocodiles at the end, one of whom they kill, and then the other one they take back to study. I thought it was meant to be imply that, oh, they had offspring.
Yeah. Yes, but there has to be a male then.
Wasn't that the point? There were two of them?
I thought that was one of its children.
Or well, it's certainly smaller. I mean, in the end, maybe the crocodile has a midget fetish.
Don't kink shame alligators.
Excuse me, could you not? I have a midget fetish.
Yeah, right. Ew, gross. Not well, ew, gross.
Thank,
just like...
Thank you, for sharing, Daniel.
But I will say, here's the thing. No one gives a shit. Like, I don't, like... And I love how she turns into, like, a... Oh, gangster, like, you're never going to take... This is eminent domain. You're never going to take my croc. The second your animal kills someone, they can just kind of do with it what they want, guys.
Kind of.
Anyway, they cut to the Museum of Natural History.
Is that what it is? Because they never... I don't recall them explicitly saying... They just said, I work at a museum in New York. And I'm like, I've heard there's a couple of those.
Well, it's got dinosaurs. It probably is a natural history museum.
I know. But the point is that the movie doesn't say...
Would they have to pay for that if they did?
No, it's a public museum. I think they were just afraid to say anything that could get them sued. And this movie, I think, was done in, like, nighttime. You know, like, okay, they're done filming the newest teen slasher film. We're just going to use their set and not touch anything.
So it's like Bowfinger?
In real life.
I would have loved to see that documentary, like you were saying, just them running around like Ed Wood with a fake crocodile and the actor has to move its arms to make it work.
I'm telling you, like, there's so much. Or if you made a Chris Guest movie out of the extras in the background that don't say anything because they don't know what to do.
No.
Like, there's no direction happening to anyone other than, like, the six people who get lines. So people in the background literally just walk back and forth holding things.
I'm pretty sure that would just be an episode of Parks and Rec.
Oh my god, how did they never do that? Where they're filming a movie in their little town? And then you just see Amy Poehler just kind of lean in, but what they really want is Nick Offerman. Right? Like, that has to be... Oh, sorry. Anything is better than talking about this movie, which...
It's got some... Basically, she gets exiled to Maine because she and her boss are having an affair, and then her boss started... I'm having an affair with a friend of hers.
Mariska Hargitay appears for 6 seconds in this movie just to cuckold Bridget Fonda.
Okay, I also want to say this. That whole plane arrives in isolated town on a lake bit, it worked in the original Wicker Man, well, the only Wicker Man that ever exists.
Bees! The bees!
No, that never happened.
How
Matt.
Dare you? That Nick Cage is... Amazing.
Who knows even more amazing? Christopher Lee. But anyway.
Hey.
Oh, of course.
One is a real movie. The other is not a real movie. Nick Cage just harasses children for 20 minutes and then gets murdered. So.
Either way, the plane landing scene worked in the original Wicker Man. It has worked nowhere else, including here.
Mm. That's where you're wrong. They didn't rip off Wicker Man. I think they tried to rip off Jurassic Park, but couldn't afford two helicopters. Because that's the feeling I get. They're like looking down at this primeval lake, and they're just like, there's a monster in that lake. And you're like, no, there's not really a monster. They want you to think there's a monster.
Maybe it'd bring some tourists to their small town.
I also love the fact that, okay, so they take a plane into this small town, right? Quote unquote small town in upstate Maine.
Yeah.
But then they're nowhere near where they have to end up anyway.
They say the county, it's Aroostook County.
Aroostook.
Yeah. Aroostook.
Which is a real place. For those of you who are keeping track at home, I'm a PhD candidate in bullshit history. And
I just mispronounced a word again, so everybody take a shot.
No, here's the thing. The Aroostook actually declared war on Canada.
Oh.
The county of Aroostook, it's called the Aroostook War, and they were a bunch of I guess, lumberjack/fishermen against the Canadian lumberjack/hunters, and so they declared war. The Aroostook Wars are literally between the state of Maine and Canada.
I'm Canada! I'm Canada!
So if you can imagine people with harpoons and axes against people with axes and guns, you pretty much have it down.
And maybe you could waterboard people with maple syrup.
What a sticky situation.
Oh,
that hurt. Well in it, Daniel. Well in your pain.
Your pain will make you powerful, Daniel.
But I love how this milquetoast Bridget Fonda is like completely like oversexed by Mariska Hargitay for 6 seconds, and then she turns into Luke Skywalker and whines the entire rest of the movie.
Oh, yeah, she is so obnoxious.
And so somehow there's a romantic subplot between her and Bill Pullman, which, no.
No. Well, first of all, there's not. We're supposed to think there is, and at the end she's like, does no one in Maine make a move? As though the script said you're supposed to be romantically entangled, and they're like, oh, shit, we forgot something.
it's like that YouTube video of the two birds with Bill Pullman just going, let me smash.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's happening. But then the rest of this movie, nothing happens. It's first of all, to call it a movie is generous. We've been talking for 16 minutes. That's a quarter of the length of the movie. The movie is 82 minutes long.
Yeah.
That's nothing. The movie doesn't exist. It's like the myth of a movie. You wouldn't even be drunk
of a move if
maybe throw in some commercial breaks would be the appropriate length.
Missed it. You're not wrong. I watched it on the Sci-Fi app, which whatever.
You know, there's like 3 or 4 sequels that they put on the Sci-Fi channel.
I had a list. Yeah, no.
One of them was Lake Placid v. Anaconda, which I don't care who you are, that is the most awesome idea that's ever been put on paper.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do a hierarchy right now. What monster would you? I mean, obviously Bruce from Jaws wins.
Oh yeah.
I would say the Jurassic Park Velociraptors should do something, but in every sequel they get dumber and dumber, so they're out. Like, they got their sequels,
well,
and
Bruce
they were terrible.
Dumber and dumber in each sequel too.
Kind of, but not to the same degree. Like
Bruce or the plot?
Why not both?
I mean, I do like when he takes down SeaWorld, which is the best. So there's Lake Placid. There's Lake Placid 2. There's Lake Placid. There's a Lake Placid just called Lake Placid in 2018, also called Legacy. There's a Lake Placid 3. There's a Lake Placid versus Anaconda. There's a Lake Acid, the final chapter, and Lake Placid 2010. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Lake Placid movies.
Good Lord. What have I been doing with my life?
Working on Sharknado films?
I guess so.
Well, if you make them cheap enough, anything's profitable. The slumlord principle.
So, I mean, you were on to something about Bridget Fonda, because the entire dynamic is like she's one of them dumb New Yorkers who don't know how we do things out here in country town.
Well, okay, let's talk about her introduction to the rest of the group. First of all, she says, why am I here? Which, you're right. Why are you here? You're a paleontologist, and you're asked to look at a bone. Here's the bone. We can FedEx it to you. It'll be there tomorrow. That's all you need to do. She shows up anyway because her boss is trying to nail her friend. Fine. Whatever. Second, all she does is complain. She gets out there and goes, "Where are we going? We're going camping."
I'm about leaves.
We're going camping. What do you mean camping? I thought you meant a Ramada Inn.
Are you kidding me?
Ramada pays good money for that.
She is a gigantic stereotype of feminists and New Yorkers, and she's the most obnoxious person ever.
She's really a stereotype of feminist. I mean, first and foremost, there's not really any sort of girl power subtext in this movie, and she's whining all the time.
Yeah, there's no girl power. There's no feminism here. There's incredible sexism. Remember what Brendan Gleeson says? He looks over at Bill Pullman and goes, "Here, I forgot my feminine napkins."
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, this movie might be one of the more sexist movies that we've seen on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's there's no feminism to be found.
Well, at the point where Betty White says, "Oh yeah, I killed my husband," that kind of counts, maybe? No.
We need to get into Betty White here for a second. So,
it does not count at all.
There is one free soiler out here. There is one libertarian stay off my land character. And she's the only townie we really get. Because Brendan Gleeson is the local sheriff for a county that apparently takes up a third of the state of Maine, we're kind of led to believe.
And he only seems to have about four or five deputies.
Well, by the end of the movie, like three. I think the only victims are deputies and one fish and game person.
Well, I can only remember two victims. It's the guy at the beginning that gets bitten in half, and then the guy gets his head bitten off.
Which is actually kind of great. I don't know. That corpse was okay.
Two 90s CGI.
No, not the biting off, the body.
Oh, the body.
Both of the bodies. Like the one where they're at the autopsy, the face looks kind of crap, but the body, like, we get to see organs, which is not bad.
Yeah.
Well, they find his head and a snake comes out of the mouth.
That's so Indiana Jones stupid. Like, I'm with you, Matt. When I saw that, I was like, giddy, but it's so cheesy.
Cheesy is not necessarily bad.
What's this movie supposed to be?
Welcome to the podcast, man. Congratulations, you get it.
Was this movie supposed to be a comedy originally, do you think?
I think it was script problems from day one, because I think what they were trying to do is that they got a lot of stern-looking men, and they wanted to make it funny in the way that when Spielberg tried to make a comedy, it was a flop. But he can make regular movies funny. You know what I mean? 1941 was a disaster, but there are moments in Jaws that are actually quite funny, right? I think that's what they thought they could do here, where they could make funny a serious movie, and they failed on both halves, right? Because Brendan Gleeson is in funny movies. If you haven't seen The Guardian, you should. It's really great. Bill Pullman, not really funny, because even in Spaceballs, he plays a straight man, but so does Gleason, so they could do it. You just have a director who's literally just firing into the darkness.
Bill Pullman is such a non-entity in this movie. I'm not sure what he's supposed to do.
I think
collect a paycheck?
I think they wrote him, he was building a bathroom. Like, they wrote him a check, and he's like, "All right, I'll be in your movie." And this is 99. This is only 3 years after Independence Day. Like,
and four after Casper, which was his big break.
Which we did. If you haven't watched, apparently this is the Bill Pullman season, guys. What else could we do of his? Spaceballs?
Spaceballs would be good.
I mean, Spaceballs is a movie we all seen that I don't think holds up.
Not really.
I mean, I know I'm going to get hate for that because of course I am.
You better comb that desert, Nick.
Well, who cares? He's known for four things: Independence Day, Independence Day Resurgence, Spaceballs, and Wake Placid. I guess we got it all.
96 credits on the Tribune.
Of course there is. And he always plays the brown-haired, like, sex symbol.
He looks like...
He's in Titan A.E.
Oh, God, what a trainer.
He was the evil Han Solo guy.
Oh. Yeah, Callum Crane. Oh, no.
Corso.
Corso. Oh,
he was the romantic lead in Mr. Wrong. Does anybody remember Mr. Wrong?
I remember Mr. Wrong. he was George Bailey in Merry Christmas, George Bailey. He was in the Virginian remake. He was in, he was in so much crap. He was in While You Were Sleeping. That's a Stay Tuned rape fantasy.
Oh, Singles. He was in Singles.
Oh, man, gross. And Sleepless in Seattle.
I like Singles.
Well, we could do an entire romantic movie month based around Bill Pullman.
As being the cuckolded partner.
While You Were Sleeping, hey, he was in Sleepless in Seattle.
Hey, he was in Newsies.
And A League of Their Own. And what was the other one? Oh, The Last Seduction. That's also another romance movie. Oh, God, he was around forever.
The Serpent and the Rainbow. He was in The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Maybe we could randomly bury some dude alive during the podcast.
Welcome to Pulling from Bill Pullman, where we read things Bill Pullman has been in.
Pulling from Pullman. He was also in Ruthless People, which you haven't, if you haven't seen. That's an amazing movie.
Oh, my God, yes.
Is that Zucker Abram Zucker?
No, it's not.
It is? No, it is.
It is.
It's just not there first. I'm trying to put it. Place it. It's Danny DeVito, Bette Midler, Judge Reinhold, and Zucker Abram Zucker.
Yeah. I've forgotten that they did that because it's not really a straight spoof, so I thought that was someone else.
No, it's Jim Abrams is the director.
You're right.
Well, you're right. Top Secret Police. Oh, I need to rewatch that. I mean, talk about this movie, man.
What happens at this point? So they're in the woods at some point, and then Oliver Platt shows up on a literal helicopter. And he's like supposed to be this celebrity croc hunter, which was this like right around the time when the actual croc hunter was a thing?
Well, the actual croc hunter knew how to handle himself in the wild and stuff. Right. This guy's just some eccentric billionaire with a crocodile fetish.
Right, but was this when the crocodile hunter had his own TV show?
I think so, because it came out, I was in high school, and I was in a commercial we played in our closed circuit TV system where I wore a Hawaiian shirt and a fedora and was pretending to be the crocodile hunter.
Steve Irwin didn't wear a fedora.
Oops.
Yeah, pay attention to continuity there, Matt. But yeah, anyway, Oliver Platt shows up, then you got a crocodile, and then there's that scene where he goes scuba diving in the water or something, and they almost get bit, and their boat gets flipped over by the croc.
Their boat gets flipped over, but nothing else happens. So what, was a crocodile just trolling them?
I guess so, I don't know. Also, I have a note that at one point in time, right around after the boat flipping, they decided, oh, hey, let's have Tom Jones in the soundtrack, even though Mars Attacks already did that.
Well, it's not unusual.
Well, here's we need to back up. This movie needs anything. Right? Like, okay, what does Jaws and Jurassic Park do? It raises the tension by having something that signals the monsters on its way. Whether it be the dorsal fin, whether it be the vibrations in the water and the rippling. Please, let's not even talk about the fact they couldn't afford background music.
They do the jumping fish thing in this movie a couple times.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at. Like, literally, that's what I was about to say.
Oh.
Right? Like, that's their warning that the monster's coming. Because there's no way to tell that there is a way to tell that a gator is coming, which is it floats. These things don't swim underwater. They swim near the surface and look like dead logs, but that's not dramatic. So this movie has to have fish explode. I don't know what's happening because that's not how fish work.
Or that scene where Bridget Fonda's in the woods and on the canoe and just goes, I keep getting hit with heads because, you know, the crocodile is eating the bodies, I guess.
This movie,
the moose head scene, I thought was pretty funny.
It was. And then she's like, you threw that at me. And then it got stupid again. Again, Brendan Gleeson is the kind of guy who's fighting the Irish mob as an English cop. Like, he's not. And then there's this, you know what she should have been played by? Because in Jurassic Park, she was a precocious kid, right?
Mm.
Like, that he just has to put up with. Like, a bunch of campers get stuck and he has to rescue them. And so there's just.
We're bringing your niece into town so you guys can go camping.
Right. So, like, because that would make sense for how much she whines. She doesn't act like an adult in this situation. Because, again, what she should be, like, if you want someone who doesn't feel in place, do an Ian Malcolm. Do someone who's cool in other situations, but here he's just out of place, so he's trying to act cool but isn't, which is kind of what Oliver Platt does. But no one is getting their character points, right? Like, again, use the archetypes you're stealing from, man. At least in Jaws, who's the Nevishy one? Who's the actor, Daniel?
Roy Schneider?
No, the other one. The nerdy scientist who comes in.
Oh, damn.
Oh, God. How did I forget Jaws? It's like my favorite movie.
The other guy?
Jaws, IMDb.
Oh, wait. God, I can picture his face now, too.
Yeah, he's a Nebbish.
Yeah, no,
I wanted to say Dustin Hoffman, but it's not Dustin Hoffman. It's Richard Dreyfuss.
That's it, yes.
But it's Dreyfuss versus the strong-jawed Roy Schneider and the crotchety Robert Shaw. Shaw,
My God, because the year, like, was it 2 years before he was in From Russia with Love? And it's the same, like, it's a completely different Strong John character. But you have, like, a testosterone fight between Roy Schneider, who's the sheriff holding him together, who's supposed to be Bill Pullman, and Robert Shaw, who's supposed to be Gleason, or the other way around. Like, the two of them, they're figuring it out. And then Dreyfuss wants to raise himself to that level, but just can't because he's not that guy. And they have that scene where they're drinking together and they're this close to getting there. There's nothing redeeming about her until Bill Pullman's like, I guess I can buy you a drink. He's so uninterested in her that he's like, Pepperidge Farm remembers that time you bought that girl a drink.
Yeah.
Pepperidge Farm has photos.
And of course, there's also the gay panic joke between between them. Mm. Because it's the 90s. You could do gay panic jokes and nobody
eat the bark off my log or something like that.
Was that a homosexual remark?
Oh, God.
Literal dialogue from this movie.
Yeah, but you know what?
I don't think it was really woke. Do you think it was woke?
It was 99. Someone should have figured it out by 99, man. Yeah. You know, you need like I mean, by this point, we had Jay and Silent Bob calling each other hetero life mates. Like, you could deal with it by this point, man. That's why you know this writer's incompetent. Like,
wasn't Jay gay?
Jason Mewes?
No, like the character, because in Dogma, there's that bit where Chris Rock's like, you masturbate more than anyone else I know.
And you think about guys.
And when you're doing it, you think about guys.
And Bob is like, I need to rewatch that. I haven't seen that in forever. It's good to see George on the screen now and again, isn't it?
Mm.
I miss Carlin. Let's round this out, man. We've been talking for half an hour about a movie. This is the Seinfeld of movies. It's nothing. It's about nothing. Betty White gets pissed. We get caught. She gets caught feeding him cows.
It was a cow. And I was just going to get into that. And how this progresses, where they come up with an idea that's straight out of Jurassic Park, where they're dangling a cow over the lake to lure the croc.
And they make an eminent domain joke.
Well, Betty White is like, what is this, an eminent? And then she starts getting kind of racist with the black guy watching her. God.
Wasn't she feeding him, serving him tea and hoping everyone else died?
Oh, serving him sweet tea and offering him chicken, too, if I recall correctly. Mm.
I don't remember the chicken. I just remember her kind of hoping that everyone else got killed.
Is it also a crime if I hope that sheriffs die? I don't know, ma'am. Yeah. He's just like, push me too far. Just do it. Just push me too far. Also, she goes to jail. There's no world where she's not in prison at the end of this.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, not reporting a murder, not reporting a death is a crime, right? Second of all,
technically, she was keeping an exotic animal as a pet, which
can be a crime. But if that pet starts killing people, that's also a crime. Yeah, and then you're hiding the fact that you're doing it. That's also a crime. And also, here's the thing: the crime is that she's not in more of this movie.
Yes.
I would love it if they do arrest her and she escapes and then releases the gator. Like, they've captured the gator, like in Lost World.
She should have been John Voight from Anaconda.
Yeah! I'll lead you to him! And then she's like, she takes out the trank gun, tranks a guy, and throws him into the lake and tries to feed them at the sea. That's a better movie. Ooh, we're fixing this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Also, get someone whose first language is English to write the script, because this is the worst dialogue.
Stefan Spielbergo wasn't good enough for you, Nick?
Apparently not. Stefan Spielbergo. I like this. It's getting saucier as we go. But like, okay.
Wow.
At one point,
meow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to let this go. Did you just meow?
Yes.
Why? What purpose did the meow serve?
Sauciness.
Meows do not designate sauciness.
Every time I think maybe we should end the podcast, I sit down with you guys. I'm like, this can never end. This is the best.
Let us continue to torment the airwaves forever and ever.
Oh, amen. Okay. But I don't even know what I was going to say. Where were we?
We were talking about Oliver Platt dangling the cow.
Oh, yeah. And he has the line, this cow disappoints me. Who writes that? Who at the end of
somebody? Certainly not me. I could probably write a better script.
Somebody who thought he was a hoot at parties.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, is that the like the last line of the day, and then you just never fix it, or did he like literally write that line and then sit down and goes, "I've earned my lunch," and then like take a long sip of his tea and be like, "Oh yes, oh that was beautiful." This cow disappoints me.
It's a line written by one of those guys that spends 8 hours a day at Starbucks to write two lines and thinks he's going to be the next Ernest Hemingway.
And writes there because he knows other people can see him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other line was, at the end, the gator is so big it gets stuck in a helicopter, which we'll get to because we're there.
Oh, yeah.
But the line is, don't kill it. It's already half dead. And Bill Pullman goes, but it's half alive. And then pulls it. Then this thing, which is not only 30 feet long, but they've shot it with stuff that doesn't make it, that doesn't work. Like, and he pulls out the smallest sidearm in this movie so far, as though that's going to be the thing to do it.
Yeah, they've already shot unloaded several rifles and handguns into the thing already. I mean, it's a, yeah.
And then he pulls out this, like, I mean, it looks like a 38 maybe, but it's by far the smallest thing they've tried to shoot at it. And he's like, oh, it'd been better if they were drinking first because this would make sense. But Gleason has a god killer. And we know it's a god killer because another gator comes out of the water and lunges at Oliver Platt.
Oh, yeah, that's how that works.
And he draws this thing and it turns to dust. There's nothing left.
Chunky salsa.
Pretty much. I mean, and Oliver Platt gets bit by the original gator in the leg, but he's okay. And then
this thing is the biggest ex machina. Like, this thing doesn't matter. Again, look at Jurassic Park. Malcolm is actually hurt.
Yeah, he's incapacitated for most of the movie.
Struck out on morphine the rest of the time, just being sexy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Oliver Platt lying around with his shirt open is not going to get a Funko Pop figure, nor is he going to be fetishized online.
Excuse me, could you not? I have an Oliver Platt fetish.
Oh, my.
I just love the idea of, like, a saxophone, like, na-na-na-na-na-na-na, as Oliver Platt's shirt is open and he's off his ass on roofies or whatever.
Oh, boy.
I mean, speaking of Anaconda, like, there should be a character just in bed, wounded the whole time.
With a tracheotomy?
Well, we don't need the tracheotomy per se.
He tried to swallow the alligator and ended badly.
Oh my god! Or he just tries to engage with the gator and something else gets him, which is essentially what happens in Anaconda. He slips on a banana peel and busts his head open and just starts foretelling what's going to happen with the gator. Oh, what a stupid movie!
Oh, Anaconda or Lake Placid?
I guess both. We've done them both now.
I'd rather watch Anaconda again than Lake Placid.
I mean, I love how the difference is this movie doesn't pretend like it knows anything about anything. Anaconda is so sure it knows about Anaconda. Don't we get a beginning scrawl?
We do.
And they say, you know, they're so sadistic, they swallow their prey and spew them up again so they can eat them again.
It's like the raptors in Jurassic Park where, like, it's the T-Rex that's, like, literally playing with the lawyer before it eats it. That's the one we need. We don't need the raptors. We need the T-Rex.
Ooh.
Oh, the yeah. T-Rexes versus Lake Placid versus Anaconda versus Tremors.
Can we get the Chuds involved somehow?
Oh my god.
Sci-Fi Channel, are you listening to this?
As long as a Sharknado doesn't show up, that's the stupidest thing that's taken over.
There's a Sharknado D&D figurine I saw once. It's like when you have to kill off an entire party.
Oh, and so the sharks have figurines?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
It's like it looks like something someone did custom rather than like an actual official product. A Sharknado D&D piece.
And they probably gave it some bullshit Latin name so it sounds like it's authentic.
Did you hear that sound? That's the sound of women all over the world deciding no thank you.
I was going to say that's the sound of capitalism failing. That's what broke it. It wasn't the fact that every minor character in Harry Potter has a Funko figurine or the fact that the Nintendo Switch is still selling games from 1986. No, it's the fact that there's a vaginal dryness cure and it's based around a D&D figurine. Oh, hell.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so it ends with Betty White feeding baby crocs, which I think we already... Well, they capture the original croc, which when it's like close-ups of the crocodile where it's a puppet, it looks fine. The CGI crocodile looks like crap.
You mean like when it bites a grizzly in half?
Yeah, like that. It ends with Betty White just tossing these little bits of chicken out in the lake, and we see these little crocs eating them.
And you're just like, eight sequels, here we go.
Yeah, I think the sequel, they explained how there are suddenly all these crocodiles in the lake.
I could not care less.
Does it involve two gators having sex? Because they explained that in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I think the idea was that her husband was a veterinarian at some top secret lab somewhere, and there were creatures he was raising, and he's ordered to destroy them. He's like, well, screw that, and he takes them all home with him.
Did you write an erotic fan fiction about this one, too?
How much are you going to pay me, Nick?
I won't. You'll just do it.
No, I won't.
Ah, oh, man, this movie.
My dignity has some price sometimes.
Some price sometimes. Matt Quinn, dignity at some price sometimes. Hey, man, I've known you too long. This is good. We get along.
I'm giving him the finger right now.
Ah, oh, I feel it. Ooh, it burns so good.
Does it hurt so good?
Yeah, girl. I spent 5 minutes today in two glasses talking about how sexy George Washington's calves made him. So I'm burnt out on facts today. Okay, so I don't sound weird, just look at pictures of George Washington paintings. They always show his calves because strong calves were a sign of sexiness. That's why men didn't cover them. So there you go. It's like having a bulge in your pants. We're out of time, guys. I'm going to start with Danny Boy, and then we're going to go to Matt, and then to me. Final thoughts.
Well, now I can't get anything out of my head besides George Washington crotch bulge. Thank you.
David Bowie?
Personally, I was thinking of Brendan Gleeson's strong calves. So.
Oh, there you go.
Same boat, different people.
This could have worked so much better if they shot it like Gremlins 2, where everybody was in on the joke, because at the center of the movie, it's a joke. Nothing can be taken seriously about it, but they tried so hard to play it like a traditional horror movie, which is terrible. So I don't know. If you really hate yourself a whole lot and the sci-fi is the only cable channel you're willing to watch, maybe check it out. That's the best I can do.
Mr. Quinn.
I can't believe this. Eight-Legged Freaks is probably a better movie. I think I remember reading some of my writing books that people care about characters, and the characters in Eight-Legged Freaks are a lot more likable. Mm. None of these people are worth a damn.
Sure not.
So, Matt, I'm going to agree with you and Daniel at everything you said, but I'm going to disagree with the conclusion. Matt, I think you're right. I think Eight-Legged Freaks works because I don't think they're well portrayed sometimes, but I think some of the characters are at least intriguing enough that I care if they die or not. No one here does that, right? In fact, I'm rooting for more of them to die.
Yeah.
I would recommend people see it, not because I like it, but because this is the most baffling movie we've done. Like, someone had a passion, but it didn't convey itself to any of the actors, to the script. There's something they're trying here, but never have I seen such a batting cage movie where, by that I mean, there's so many pitches thrown and every single swing is a miss. this is a batting cage. Like, and even the ones that they hit, there's nowhere for the movie to go. Like, for example, they have a scene where the movie is saying, well, maybe it was a grizzly bear that killed this guy. I mean, he was just cut in half. Like, there's animals out here. Maybe there was a mauling. And so they literally have it was supposed to be a black bear. But the black bear comes out, and then the gator, like, threatens everyone. They're like, oh, no, maybe it was this black bear. And then the gator comes out of nowhere and bites it in half. That should have been a punctuation point at the end of Act 2.
Bart the Bear's retirement party.
And yet, it's the dumbest scene. It looks like garbage.
Yeah, it does.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, even if the director gets a hit, there's nowhere for it to go. It just kind of dribbles against a metal cage and falls dead. This is a batting cage movie. We're done. So, with that in mind, guys, go to the wall. The Facebook wall. or to our Twitter feed. You know what? There's so many more people following us on Twitter right now. We're blowing up. So wherever you follow us, tell us which monster movie you wish we did but we didn't do, because we're going to have a listener request month in the spring. But Matt, you already tipped your hand. What's the movie we're doing next week for you, who's, I guess, batting cleanup in your monster movie month?
phantoms. Don't you know that?
Well, I mean, since we're telling the people.
All right, fine. Deep Rising, because that's not something you see every day.
Yeah, Deep Rising. As of the moment we're recording, it's on full on YouTube.
Oh, no.
I won't be here for Deep Rising. I know all one of you who cares about that is crying right now.
Come on, have some self-esteem, please.
We will talk Deep Rising. And that will conclude, of course, our Monster Movie Month. Now, for those of you who have not voted, it will be a surprise to you. But our listeners have chosen our November month. And we're not going to tip our hand yet because we tell 1 week in advance. But listener choice in November, guys, as we do an entire series for the first time in 3 years. Is that possible? Yeah, 3 years before we started the spinoff James Bond mission briefing.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Not the good one. Our version. So stay tuned next week, every future week, as I put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candace Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Blue Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.